Hello and welcome to Redefine, your home for news about parental school choice and education reform.
Chair Chartrian, first of all, thanks so much for letting me have some of your time today to talk to you about what's going on with Florida and education. I wanted to start off with this. You know, you're a school choice guy. You were instrumental in bringing KIPP, the very fine charter school network, to Jacksonville. Can you talk to me a little bit about, you know, where you see Florida headed in terms of school choice? You know, what the landscape for parental school choice is going to look like in 5 or 10 years? Is it going to be a lot different from what we see now?
You know, I think it's going to continue to grow and probably outpace, obviously, the growth of public schools, or I should say neighborhood schools. Charter schools are public schools, and we should always remember that. But certainly the train's left the station on school choice, and, you know, KIPP is just one example. But I think, you know, I often say that freedom is abundant in America, but it's not universal. And when you're stuck in a broken system and you're poor and you're full of despair and you only have one choice, and that choice happens to be an F school, that's not freedom. And so I think the school choice movement is bringing more freedom, especially to the most underserved children in the state of Florida. I think that's a good thing.
Okay. Well, and forgive me for bringing KIPP up again, but I'm fascinated by KIPP and other charters that have similar models. And so let me ask you this question. So we've had, you know, 10 or 15 years of evidence now that KIPP and Yes Prep and similar models work pretty well and work for those kids that you just described, you know, low-income struggling kids whose neighborhood schools may not be doing it for them.
Right.
Yet, you know, when I look around my neck of the woods in Tampa Bay, I see virtually no schools, public or private, that are like KIPP or Yes Prep. Why don't we have more charter schools like them, and how do we change that?
Sure. Well, I worked long and hard with a coalition of people here in Jacksonville to convince KIPP to come to Florida. Florida was not on their radar screen for expansion. Part of the problem that we have in attracting someone like KIPP is the lower allocation per student of funding. And so they're concerned that the amount of money that has to be raised from the private sector, that delta would be too steep, and therefore it would be hard to keep it sustainable. And one of the issues with KIPP is the sustainability of it and making sure that we can scale it. And I happen to think there's ways to do it, and there's ways to do it if we could all put our arms around it and get thinking about it in terms of whether it's after-school programs. For instance, in the city of Jacksonville, there's, I think, $25 million spent through the Jacksonville Children's Commission for after-school programs. Well, I would dare to tell you that we keep our kids in school at 5:30, and there's no better after-school program than KIPP. And so there are pockets of money. Right now there's a 21st century grant that's out there from the federal government, part of Race to the Top, that's for after-school programs. And there are other grants that are out there that could help offset that delta between what the funding is from the state to what it really costs to run a KIPP school.
So you feel like there are ways to cobble together existing funds to raise the per pupil that you need for a school like KIPP?
Yeah, let's start with capital outlay.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think there was some legislation passed on high-performing charters that in the third year they'll start to get capital outlay. Correct me if I'm wrong on that, but I believe that's true. And so we are a public school, but most of the districts, and it's left to the discretion of the district at each county, decide whether or not they want to allocate capital, and most do not. And so right there, you know, we're in the hole versus a typical neighborhood school. So there's ways to do it. If there was more capital allocated, if there were after-school program monies that could be allocated, there's no question in my mind that KIPP could be a sustainable and scalable program in the state of Florida. We have actually two KIPP schools in Florida. We started with one 2 years ago. We just opened our second kindergarten elementary school this August. And so we only have two here. There are states, for instance, the state of Texas has 33 KIPP schools going to 38 KIPP schools. In fact, I think in Houston, KIPP may have somewhere close to a 12 to 14% market share of actually all kids in public school. So there's ways to be able to make sure that we wrap around monies to make it sustainable.
But you think, just to make sure I got this right, you think there are existing funds, they just have to be cobbled together in the right way. I mean, you're not talking about, I mean, I think one thing I've heard some people point to is say, well, look how much it costs KIPP per pupil and how much more than a traditional public school that is. Isn't that a, and KIPP's working, I would hope they would acknowledge.
Sure.
Isn't that evidence that when it comes to low-income kids, if we really want to get them to make real improvements, not just marginal gains, but significant gains, we would go to a model like KIPP, which would cost more. In other words, I can see some people saying, isn't KIPP proof that we need more money per pupil in Florida?
Yeah, well, I think we need more money in certain pockets. I'm not sure that we need more money broadly. And let's remember, the money isn't always the issue.
Sure.
I think the allocation and the prudent allocation of resources and scarce resources these days are really what's important. Florida's ranked number 10 in the nation in student achievement. They're ranked number 47 in spending. So there isn't always a direct correlation between spending and achievement. It's the prudent use of the money that's important.
Chair Chartrand, let me switch gears on you slightly. So you just became the chair of the state board the other day, and I think it's fair. It's fair to say it's a pretty sensitive time. I don't know that there's ever been an easy time to be board chair, but you know, you got Common Core coming down. You have this explosion of school choice options, and you do have. I also think this is fair to say, you know, more frustration than in the past with some elements of the state's accountability system.
Sure.
So as the new chair, what do you put down as your top one or two priorities?
Sure. Well, let me preface by saying I'm about 4 days into the job here.
Okay.
I was elected last Friday. I have been on the board since May of 11, so my first almost year and a half or so has been a great experience, a learning experience, obviously. I will first tell you I am not a practitioner. I actually have an education degree, but I didn't choose it. I went into business. I'm a business executive, but I have a strong passion for education. I am not proud of the fact that America is 17th in reading, 25th in math, and 30th in science in the world. We used to be number one. And I believe that if this continues, we'll undoubtedly lower our standard of living it's just a matter of time. And so I just have one goal, and that's a quality education for all. We can do better. We must do better. And we got to prepare our kids for a very rapidly changing world. We're not just competing for jobs in this country. We're competing for jobs around the world. And quite frankly, the whole technology revolution has marginalized or taking a lot of manual jobs out of the economy. And so we have got to prepare our kids better. I was reading an article that Tom Freeman wrote, I think it was in New York Times last week. He happened to be in Shanghai in an elementary school, and they were teaching the kids how to program.
Wow.
And so, you know, we have got, and I'm not advocating that we put programming into the elementary schools, but we've got to prepare our kids for a rapidly changing world. We've got to raise standards. We have to raise standards incrementally. I get a little concerned at times, and I always use the analogy of if you can jump on the high bar 6 feet, you don't raise it to 7 feet and try to get over it because you're not going to get over. You raise it from 6 to 6'1 to 6'2, 6'3, and that's how you incrementally improve to continue to excel. And I think that's what we need to do at the Department of Education.
Well, that go ahead. Well, that dovetails with another question I had. you know, again, there has been some concern and criticisms of the state accountability system this year, you know, after the FCAT writing test thing and some of the school grades being miscalculated. What do you think of those criticisms? I think some of them valid?
Sure. Look, I think we made a mistake on the writing, and we also sent 200 school grades out that were wrong, and that's unacceptable. And so that will be my first priority. First priority, obviously, is to get a new commissioner. But I will work with the new commissioner to look at our staffing and look at our department heads and make sure that we have the right people in the right jobs, because we have to hold ourselves accountable first. And, yes, those mistakes do get made in any organization, but we need to make sure that we put in all the measures possible to limit those mistakes.
Okay.
And I always say, you know, when it comes to something like that, use the carpenter's rule, measure twice and cut once.
Okay. Well, how do you convince people that Florida schools and Florida students really are making academic progress? You know, and I ask this because I personally think that's really important context for all these debates we're having about education. If Florida's making progress, and the department makes a mistake, or, you know, if lawmakers overreach on this policy or that policy, you know, that's one thing. But if Florida's still, you know, down there in the basement on key academic indicators, then that's another thing.
Sure.
So, you know, is there anything that the Board of Education could do or the department could do to get the appropriate context on these debates? Or, you know, are you just at the mercy of the media and your critics?
Yeah, well, I will make sure that as we move forward that we do get the facts out. You know, obviously, I think there's Jeb Bush has, I think, with his foundation, done a pretty good job of making sure that he gets out the statistics of what's happened here in Florida over the last 10 years, and we've had tremendous gains in Florida. Our graduation rate is up significantly. I think it's like 10 points. We're up in all categories. Minorities, African Americans, Hispanics are making better strides in Florida than we are in the nation. And so we need to do a better job of getting the facts out and making sure that people understand that not only are we improving significantly, and we've got a long way to go, but other states around the country are adopting what Florida's doing here. So I think you know, the idea that other states are looking to Florida to try to improve their education system is pretty good evidence that we're doing the right stuff here.
Okay. One last question, and I appreciate all your time and your patience with me.
Sure.
So, and this is a question tied into some recent news. So, late yesterday, the Florida Supreme Court decided that this lawsuit over education quality, which was filed, I think, 3 years ago, can go forward at a lower court level. The thrust of the suit is basically that education quality in Florida isn't very good. You know, I know you're fairly new to the state board, but what do you think of that lawsuit, and what do you think of the courts potentially making decisions about what quality education looks like?
Well, I don't know a lot about, I haven't read a lot about the decision that the court made, so I'll have to pass on giving you a specific answer on that. I will dig into it and read it.
Okay.
But the word quality and how you define quality is, to me, fairly difficult. That's something that, you know, as a business person, we've always wanted to be the best at what we do, and we have a hard time defining what the best is and what quality is. I think the best way to do it is to benchmark Florida against other states and globally. Certainly, you can look at NAEP scores. Our NAEP scores have been pretty consistent. I think they dipped a little bit this past year, but the NAEP scores are good. Our graduation rate continues to improve. And I would look at the stats and compare them, and hopefully you could get to the right answer there. The question I have for you is, and I'm not familiar with it, but is it over a quality education or is it over funding?
It's broader than funding. I think some of the media coverage limits or makes it sound like it's limited to funding, and it's not. I was a reporter at the Tampa Bay Times, the St. Pete Times, then when it was filed, and it's clearly much broader than funding. It's funding and a suite of policies. I mean, they're basically saying not only is education in Florida not funded well enough, but the policies have not been good either. So it's definitely not a funding thing, even though in shorthand that's the way it comes across in a lot of the newspaper articles.
Sure. Well, I will dig into that, and I'll certainly work with the department on our response to that. And I think the best way to do it is to look at the data.
Okay.
Well, I'm a data-driven person. I'd like to look at the data and how we're doing, and how we're doing against other states, and how we're doing against other countries. And I think that will tell the story.
Well, do you have any concerns at all about, you know, the courts deciding what quality is? The courts, you know, looking at whatever data they want to look at and come into conclusions about. I mean, I'm not sure exactly how this thing is headed and what a potential remedy would be, but, you know, we're taking this out of y'all's hands and the legislature's hands.
Sure.
And put it in the courts.
I certainly have a concern with that. And I'm not sure that's why we have the courts. We have a legislative body, and we have a Department of Education, and I'm not sure the courts need to get involved in this. But look, you can sue somebody for anything these days, and evidently it's gone up there, and they've ruled on it. It is concerning, and you know, I think we need to address it appropriately. I would guess, though, even though they're using the quality piece, that it's about funding. Behind all of it, it's really about funding.
Okay.
Well, that's my guess.
Okay. Well, Chair Chartrand, this has been great. Thank you so much for all your time.
Okay, thank you, Ron.